It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are about to say goodbye to May and hello to June. And that means that we'll probably be saying goodbye to a lot of spring ephemerals, a lot of those flowers that bloom down under the trees. We heard from our good friends at the North Shore Community School about spring ephemerals and how they get their blooming done before the tree canopy closes off the sunlight. As it stands, in a lot of stands of trees, there is less than 3% of the sunlight actually reaches the forest floor. One of the things I've noticed this year and this week actually is that trees have leaves of different sizes in different places. So if you're gonna have, you know, a south exposure and you've got great view of the sun and it's kind of uninterrupted all day long, you're going to put a great big leaf out there. The tree's going to grow a great big leaf there. But on the north side of the tree and maybe down toward the bottom of the tree, it's going to grow a much smaller leaf. And so when you talk to botanists who tell you that you should, you know, secure a leaf for identification purposes, they advise that you pick a leaf from somewhere about halfway up the tree so that you get a representative sample, not the biggest and not the smallest, but something average that kind of fits with the program. So check out those. By the way, if you're looking at flowering shrubs and bushes and trees, you probably have noticed that the June berries are done flowering, the pin cherries are done flowering, the plums are done flowering. A lot of the flowering crab apples in my yard have at least They've had their peak, and they're much past their peak now. In fact, yesterday I think I estimated that about a third of the flowers remained viable on the trees in my yard, the flowering crabs, and I have an American Splendor crab that is at the same point, and a Zestar apple that's kind of in that same group. The flowers are definitely past their prime. So the bumblebees have been very, very busy this last week. Now the choke cherries are starting to bloom. And I have been looking at choke cherries this past week. And along about Saturday, I noticed the first flowers on the choke cherries. Those flowers look like, look at your thumb. And from the second knuckle, the one that flexes right over the meaty part of your thumb out to the end of your thumb, that's about the size of the average choke cherry, unless you've got the hands of a real farmer or a heavy equipment mechanic. Your thumb is going to be, if it's about my size, that's about the size of the flowers on a choke cherry. And you can, and they're tight. There are just like dozens and dozens of flowers on each of these structures. So check those out. Lots of stuff going on with them. Canada Mayflower, the false lily of the valley, is budded here and not yet flowering. Bluebead lily, same thing, budded but not flowering. Wild sarsaparilla, budded but not flowering. Pardon me. Red elderberry, another one of the shrubs that had flowers and is now past, I wouldn't say completely gone, but definitely getting down there. Black ash began leafing out this week, and that's a couple days late. The white pines have their candles on them now. The new growth is coming up on white pines, and they're about 4 days late. Jack pines, the other day I was coming into town, Sunday I was coming into town, and the pollen from the jack pines looked like smoke. It was so thick in certain areas that it was almost impossible to see through. It was like, at first I thought it was raining up ahead of me, and then as I got closer I realized, no, it wasn't a little rain squall, it was dust pollen from the jack pine. So lots and lots of trees probably are going to be pollinating in the next week or two. As Joel mentioned from down in Park Lake, the cotton from the aspens was floating around this week, and many of the aspen trees had shucked their flowers. And I'm not sure. I should look up. Maybe somebody out there listening knows what's going on with the aspens. But they seem to throw their flowers, the female flowers, they throw them off the tree well before they've had a chance to burst and send that cotton flying. And I'm not sure why they would do that, except that maybe they know that the odds of success are pretty limited when it comes to an aspen seed, and that they have a much better time of it by throwing those, by growing from rhizomes, from roots. A starflower is blooming, and starflower is a beautiful little flower, probably half an inch across. It's white. It has seven petals mostly. I've seen six and I've seen eight, but seven seems to be most common, and nature doesn't do a lot of seven-petaled flowers, so it's a kind of an interesting little flower. It has sort of pale green, kind of yellowish green leaves that are also quite pointed. So the whole affair really is star-like when you see the star flower out blooming. This past week, I noted that the marsh marigolds were kind of at the end of their growing, flowering. There's still a few marsh marigolds blooming, but basically they're getting down to the end. Dwarf raspberry is in the same state. Labrador tea has begun blooming in the bogs, and if you're driving between here and Duluth, you're probably looking at a lot of areophorum, which is cotton grass. And if you're driving by these bogs and you see all of this white, looks like cotton out there, that is the seed stage of a plant called Areophorum vaginatum, and that is the cotton grass, tawny cotton grass, and there's a lot of it out there floating around. Poison ivy is up about 10 centimeters in my yard. That's roughly 5 inches tall. Trumpeter swans are still sitting on their nest and keeping an eye on things in their neighborhood. If you didn't catch purple clematis, you're probably almost done. It's been blooming for the last 10 or 12 days, and it is well on its way toward being done. The red oaks are in flower, and if you're looking at a red oak, you'll see the tiny, like quarter-inch wide little acorns that are going to be this year's full-grown acorns. And if you look just a little further out the stem, you'll see these tiny, tiny pinhead-sized red flowers. And those are the flowers of the red oak. And they are, I have pictures of them on the KAXE, KBXE Season Watch page. Harry Hutchins and I went out to a place near Warba where there's a kind of an old growth forest. And we looked at spring beauties, which seem to only grow there in this part of the country. I've never seen spring beauties anywhere else. We saw toothwort. Jack in the Pulpit, that was where I got the picture of the striped coral root, which is in full bloom right now and very beautiful. Welby Smith, in his book Orchids of Minnesota, describes the coral roots as parasites of a fungus. And that seems harsh criticism for a plant that is so gorgeous when you find them in bloom. Lilacs are blooming. They're probably here in Grand Rapids approaching their peak of bloom. Carrion flower, we found that out in the Feely unit. Large flowered trilliums are blooming quite nicely just about everywhere. Nodding trilliums blooming in my yard. The cowslips are kind of getting down toward the end of it. And interrupted fern has unrolled to the point where you can make out the part of the fern that is the fertile part. And so you can check that out. And yesterday, while I was walking along in my yard, kind of checking things out, I came across the bunchberry in bloom. And the bunchberry is a pretty amazing plant, and I wanted to read to you a little bit of a piece that I wrote about bunchberries a while back because they are so amazing. So You may not be aware of it, but we have a world champion flower in our forests. And in the late days of May, it blooms. If the scientists are correct and further research doesn't knock the bunchberry from its exalted position, then it will remain the fastest flower on Earth. And now you're probably asking yourself, fastest in what way? They certainly don't move about the forest floor, nor do they erupt from the ground with any great speed. However, when they bloom, their pollen is launched into the air in less than 0.4 of a millisecond. That's less time than it takes a bullet to travel the length of a rifle barrel. Bunchberry, or Cornus canadensis, is a small plant that forms dense carpets of white blooms under shady forests. It has 4 to 6 heavily veined leaves that appear to grow in whorls. A close examination of the stem will reveal that rather than whorls, the leaves are very short internodes. What we often mistake for the flowers are actually modified leaves called bracts. These 4 white leaves serve to bring insects to the real flowers. Every bunchberry may have from 20 to 50 flowers. If you've ever looked at a bunchberry, you realize these true flowers are very small. The flowers of the bunchberry are about 1/10 of an inch tall and have 4 tiny petals. These are the flowers now, not those bracts. These petals enclose the stamens and restrain them, actually. The stamens are folded within the bud and store the energy that will launch the pollen when triggered. The enveloping petals pinion the stamens until an insect jostles them. As the petals spring back, the stamens are thrust outward and a hinged strap connecting the stamen to the anther quickly accelerates the pollen to 24,000 meters per second, or about 800 times the force experienced by astronauts during launch. This serves to propel the pollen into the air an astonishing 10 times the height of the flower. Air resistance quickly decelerates the extremely light pollen grains, but this is enough to get them up and away from their host plant. And if you'd like to see a video of this amazing process, we will post a link on our page for you, and you can take a close look at what it is I'm talking about when it comes to the bunchberry. Why does the bunchberry flower explode? Well, it helps to enhance the chance of success in the case of an insect visiting the flower. The forceful nature of the ejection of the pollen embeds it deep within the insect's hairy body. This makes it difficult for the insect to recover and eat all of the pollen grains, ensuring that some will remain on the insect as the insect visits another bunchberry. In the event that the insect only visits one bunchberry, the explosion will throw some of the pollen up into the wind stream, allowing it to fall on another flower. And just to conclude then, if you continue to observe the bunchberry through the summer, you'll see that some few flowers of each plant will be fertilized and develop berries. Remember that each plant has from 20 to 50 flowers, but seldom will you find one more than 4 or 5 berries. These berries are edible, though they are somewhat insipid. Writing in his book, The Canadian Naturalist, Philip Henry Gross called them farinaceous and agreeable. Farinaceous is another way of saying starchy. Another Canadian writer describes them as tasteless, but adds that they can be thrown into a pudding to add color. I occasionally toss a few into my mouth as I wander in the woods in the fall. They provide a bit of moisture when the mouth is dry, but they have little to recommend them. So, check out the bunchberries. They're going to be blooming in a forest floor near you soon. That's our Phenology Report for this week. As always, if you have observations, comments, or questions you'd like to share, please get in touch with us.